Now, after we talked about two industrialized countries on this continent and Mexico, we're moving to a different region. And it is a pleasure for me to introduce Marie Chantal Messier. Marie Chantal is a senior nutrition specialist at the World Bank. So we'll have also not only two sociologists struggling in an environment of economists at their workplaces, but also the views of a colleague in nutrition who works also with a lot of economists, I guess, at the World Bank, working in the Latin American and Caribbean, as well as the Middle East and Northern African regions. Her area of expertise is the design and management of international programs that promote cross-sectoral approaches to improve nutrition security in middle and low-income countries. If you were putting good attention to this introduction, you will realize right away that in her bio, Marie Chantal is talking about nutrition security, right? Thank you for that. let me find not only Marie Chantal has led the first vitamin A distribution campaign in Sierra Leone after the Civil War, as well as has instituted national wheat flour fortification in Guinea. In Haiti, she introduced cassava bread fortification for school breakfast and use of micronutrient powders in the World Food Program basket, which were later on massively distributed to children post-earthquake. She contributed to a number of articles, publications, and blogs. She is currently leading a large novel study on that evaluates the capacity of countries in Latin America and the Caribbean to project nutrition status of mothers and young children in times of crisis and emergencies. Prior to joining the World Bank, Marie Chantal held positions for the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition in Geneva, the United Nations World Food Program in Haiti, Helen Keller International in Guinea and Sierra Leone, the Canadian Center for Studies in International Cooperation in Mali, and the Eastern Ontario Health Unit in Canada. She's a registered dietitian and, very importantly, holds an MBA from the Université Laval, as well as a baccalaureate in sciences in the nutritional sciences from McGill University. Marie Chantal was part of the dietetics program at McGill University at the time where the McDonald campus was still called the McDonald College. I want to thank Marie Chantal very much for her presence here. And we had a little time there where we're putting together this panel. And we were able, thanks to your efforts and the colleagues who are organizing this meeting, we were able to bring her here and had the voice of a McGill alumni in this panel as well. Thank you so much. And Marie will talk about tackling the South Asia enigma. I'll leave it there, because it's an enigma.
Thank you very much. Muchas gracias. Un placer. Thanks to every one of you, and thank you for the organizer. It is both a great honor and a pleasure to be here at McGill. It's actually my first time that I set foot on the downtown campus, because I obviously studied at the McDonald College, now McDonald campus. And so I have to say that I never thought I would actually be presenting here. So it's a real great pleasure. There's a couple of reasons why it's also a pleasure and honor. I'll tell you a little bit, and I gather that some of the dietetic students and nutrition students are here, and hopefully also some of the agriculture students are here. And I don't know if it's still like that, but when I was a student, it was very interesting at McDonald because it was very obvious by the third year that although we did have some shared courses during the first year of training, by the third year, you had the dietetics girls, because it was mostly girls. We had two men studying with us on one side of the corridor. And then on the other side of the corridor, you would have the ag students. And we wouldn't talk to each other. One of the reasons that the ag students thought, the girls smell like perfume, bleh. And then obviously the dietetics girls thought, ooh, they smell like farm, ooh. So the reason why I'm saying that is that here I am, I won't tell you how many years later, but quite a few years later, and I'm working with ag guys. I'm actually now sitting on the ag sector in the World Bank. And I think that the greatest part about us, and there are a few things that have changed, but two of them that strike me the most is that one, food is no longer cheap. And the other thing I think that changed a lot of the nutrition, the way that nutrition work nowadays, is that we now know that there is an economic impact to malnutrition, which is worth a lot when you do talk to politicians and you design national programs. And we do know that malnutrition, whether it's over or undernutrition, maintains people into the cycle of poverty. So this is why it's so interesting to actually work with colleagues from across the board, cross-sectoral, to address undernutrition and malnutrition and create shared value. It's a business term that by Michael Porter, but I think it's very important for the ag, nutrition, economic people to work together to create shared value throughout from field to fork. So that's a little bit what I want to talk about in the next few slides. I was working in the Latin American region until 2 weeks ago, and this is my new field of work in the South Asia. What is very interesting for me to change from South Asia from Latin America is that actually South Asia, and this is what I'm going to talk about, the South Asian enigma, is that South Asian countries are actually looking very much towards Mexico and Brazil, who have very successfully achieved substantial reduction in undernutrition in quite a short amount of time. And I did a little, if you ever want, just Google me. I did a little analysis, and the only difference is not economic growth. It's one of the main differences is that these two countries have reinvested in pro-poor programs. And so I think that's the link that we're going to try to do this morning. So what is the South Asian enigma? Actually, South Asia has done pretty good on an economic basis. However, this is not translated into reduction in undernutrition, especially in children. South Asia still has the highest level of undernutrition in the world, but it had sustained economic growth. And so let's look at some of the factors that influence that. So sustained economic growth, they have, how did they achieve that? Better macroeconomic environment. They reduced poverty. They increased spending on human development, so education, health, so on and so forth. But why do they still have the highest level of malnutrition, even ahead of sub-Saharan Africa? Gender inequality, that's a big one. IFPRI has studied that if gender inequality was reduced, the number of children that would actually be improved just by empowering women would be more than 13 million children less malnourished. That's actually a 13 percentage point just by empowering women. Social exclusion, we did talk that in Latin America, the social gaps are very big, especially with the caste system in South Asia. Very inefficient food and nutrition security programs. One of them, and the World Bank is now studying some of these programs, and I'll talk a little bit about the political economy of some of the food and nutrition security programs. And definitely a lack of knowledge of what causes undernutrition and malnutrition, as well as problems with poor hygiene. So those are all kinds of factors that we need to play with when we try to address food and nutrition security in South Asia. I'm a nutritionist by training, but what I love working in the World Bank is that they've been able to put numbers, economic numbers, on nutrition. And this is how actually it opened the door for us to talk to the Minister of Finance. Because before that, health, nutrition, it's all in the kitchen. It's a woman thing. It's all about health. Not true. We know now that it's not true anymore. And so one of the very convincing factors that allows us to work cross-sector is a few of them that I really like is that actually children that or adults that were malnourished as children earn 10% less as an adult. Reduced schooling, at least 1 year less than children who were well-nourished. Reduced cognitive development, so you can have the best education system you have, but if your if these children were malnourished, had iodine deficiency during pregnancy, their IQ is reduced. So how do you expect those children to be successful in school if they actually their life is their life and their chances of success are diminished right from birth? Increased illnesses, increased mortality. The Lancet said about 1/3 of child mortality is linked to malnutrition. And the worst of it is that 2-3% of the GDP, the gross domestic product of countries, is lost out of malnutrition, which in a lot of countries results to large amount of money in millions and billions. And when you talk to when you do the return on investment with a politician saying it would cost this to do a cross-sectoral program in nutrition versus this is how much you lose, they start listening to you. Some of the challenges, definitely hidden hunger, just like in Latin America, being short. Huh, that's normal. I mean, we all know about the short Mexicans. But no, trying to convince policy makers that being short is not normal for indigenous people or for South Asian people. It's actually a product of malnutrition is a challenge. Also, when you try to do cross-sectoral programs, malnutrition is associated as a problem of the poor. So in South Asia, where you have very high economic growth or good sustained economic growth, you're like, you know what? We're doing so well. Can we talk about them? This is not a priority. Food and nutrition are often dissociated, just like my example at McDonald College. Hi, guys. Nutrition chicks, don't talk too much together. How do we do that? And it's not always easy. The other thing that actually also shocked me when I started working in international development was this very big dissociation between the concept of food security and nutrition. And this is why I like to use the term nutrition security, which I hope encompasses a broader perspective. Unfortunately, we've focused a lot on food security being a norm of calories, which nowadays, with the double burden of malnutrition in emerging economies and in a lot of developing countries, where you have a lot of women who are short, anemic, and chubby. And I think we see that quite a bit also in the United States. And so how do you actually try to convince your workers in government that it's all about one food chain from field to fork? Place of women and children in society, I've talked about it. Political economy in South Asia, these very large food assistance program, we're doing a political economy piece where we see that different stakeholders have different stake in it, meaning we're trying to make reforms in those programs, but it's quite difficult because you have a lot of the scientific elite community that think, oh, well, only the scientific community have the answer. And of course you cannot get the private sector in it. Then you have the private sector and say, well, don't touch this because we're actually making quite a bit of money and profits out of this. And then you have the medical scientific community thinking, oh, we have to give only micronutrients and so on and so forth, and other people who say, oh, no, 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 just local foods. It should be enough. And we know now that for very young children and often for pregnant mothers, only local food is not sufficient because they don't have access to nutritious food. Food price volatility, one of the things, for example, when I was working in El Salvador that was quite interesting, and this was brought up this morning, is as the food prices increased, the diet changed, not in terms of calories, but in terms of the quality. And so what we saw is that rates of anemia went up, but not necessarily rates of undernutrition, or and so people maintained their weight. Climate change and fragile states also is definitely a challenge. I just want to talk a little bit about one of the initiatives that the World Bank has set forth to help governments and stakeholders in the South Asia region. It's called the South Asia Food and Nutrition Security Initiative, the FONSI, and it's also funded by the UK government and the Australian government. And its goal is transformational. It's basically how do we support them to do cross-cutting intervention that will lead to improvement in food and nutrition security. How do we bring the ag people, economic people, and nutrition people? And it's basically to increase the government and development partners to do these cross-sectoral programs. What's the SAFANSI approach? Multi-sectoral. I already talked about this. Actionable. So how can you actually do something? Not necessarily theory, but how do you translate science into something feasible, low-hanging fruits? How do you operationalize science in the field? And having a strategic impact. So nutrition community has a lot of success of doing these trials, controlled trials, and so very effective when we try to scale them up. This is where we have an issue. This is where the challenge is. So how can we go for transforming and having a strategic impact in policies? Three ways we do that. We support more analytical work, analysis, a lot of advocacy, and capacity building of governments and countries. What do we address in terms of social dimension? In three main categories, food availability and access to food. That's very important. So basically helping small farmers increase food production. Also in Latin America, I'm trying to work with the ag sector of introducing biofortification into their programs. And also very important is effective social safety net programs. I think the presentation this morning were very important, demonstrating how social safety net can actually support food availability and food security. Nutrition security, focusing on this narrow window of opportunity of the first 1,000 days, meaning from pregnancy or from conception to the age of two. This is quite difficult to achieve with governments because they say, well, how about a child who is three and underweight? Fine, do it. How about a child who's in school and needs school feeding? Yes, great. But if you want the biggest bang for your buck, invest it in that narrow period of time where you can actually change the life of a child and make sure that he or she has the proper foundation for good human development. And some of the cross-cutting theme, as I said, is gender inequality and undernutrition. So how do you address that? How can we actually empower women to take better care of their own health, because they are undernourished in South Asia, and also for children, but also the context in which they operate, because we often put the burden on women without really looking at what is the social dimension and where she lives and what her capacity to make decisions in terms of health, even buying food or cooking. So it's this is the type of analysis we're looking at. Improving efficiency, so where do you invest, where is the most important, and the political economy, I discussed that a little bit earlier. So clearly multi-sectoral scope, agriculture, rural development. We do a lot of work with our social protection colleagues. I think social protection is a wonderful channel to deliver nutrition intervention. Social development, water and sanitation, especially in South Asia. The hygienic condition and not having access to safe water is a main determinant of undernutrition. We work in 7 countries, the one with the highest burden of malnutrition. And some of the results we have in terms of analysis is a very interesting simulation tool for decision makers that they can say, okay, if I invest this much in this type of program, this is how much I will be able to reduce malnutrition. It's one of the things. We did also a gender and nutrition mapping, trying to find which are the programs that actually merge both or where there is potential to merge both. The World Bank has helped a lot the different governments in setting multi-sectoral platforms for nutrition and having multi-sectoral action plan. So how do you mainstream nutrition or put nutrition goals into government programs, and capacity building, particularly we had a innovation development marketplace where NGOs could present their very innovative programs and get money to further develop it. How do we engage? High commitment. The World Bank, especially in South Asia, is one, nutrition is one of the top priorities. The good thing also is that sometimes we're seen as the bad guys, but we do have a long and trusted relationship with clients. And I've talked about the other thing. What's the next step? Furthering at the national and local level, what we call domestic stewardship platform, which is basically a multi-sector partnership at the local level that will capacitate more people to do more nutrition and cross-sectoral action, integrate nutrition and social observatory, and growing partnership with other donors. And that's it. Thank you. If you're interested in Safansi, please visit that website.
Marie Chantal, you told us in a very delightful way that while working with food security and feeding security and nutrition security, you need to learn several languages from different disciplines. So thank you, merci, vielen Dank, muchas gracias, tashakor, maltiosh, and spasiba, and so on. Thank you so much. So